Earlier on the show, the head of the Guatemala Truth Commission told us that the finding that affected him most was the military's sexual assaults against women. My guest, Jennifer Schirmer, has interviewed members of the Guatemalan military who committed rape and torture. She teaches at Harvard and is the author of The Guatemalan Military Project, A Violence Called Democracy, which is based on those interviews. I asked her to read an excerpt of her interview with a military man who raped and tortured civilians.
This is a young man who, basically at 16, was asked to become a G2, which is an Army intelligence investigator and torturer. And he was trained in some of the methods by being taken to one of the cells where they have people destined to be killed by the Army. And they basically, he said, give you a knife and throw you together to see how you react while that officer watches. And in the cell, they said, he said, they give you, you have to figure out a way to torture that person, how to kill that person, and if you have enough courage to do that. It's sort of, in many ways, a cold-blooded training. And then he said, you go on to begin to do your work, and you make pieces of that person to do it like one cuts up an animal. And if one does the job well, and they think you have enough courage to do these things, then they give you a position in a patrol to go out and torture those who need to be eliminated, according to the Army. In part of the interview that I had with him, I asked him, as a G2 participant, did torturing a woman include raping her? And yes, he said, this is normal, but it depends on the women, too, because there are many women who aren't worth the effort to look at. But at times, the opportunity arose to be able to kidnap a young woman, to investigate a young woman, or for a young woman combatant to be wounded in combat. Well, that woman couldn't escape us. That woman, the very first thing would be to rape her, right? That's the very first thing. By everyone on the patrol, I ask? Yes, everyone. The chief is the first. He laughs. And then the lieutenant and the commander of G2 and the chief of the patrol. If I were chief of the patrol on that day, then it would be my turn. This woman I like, and so I would tell them, leave her over here or cover me. The rapes occurred as normal procedure.
Now, what was his attitude about this when he was describing rape as normal procedure? Did he seem to have any remorse about that?
Well, actually, later on, he did say that the message he wanted to give to those who don't know anything about G2 is this, and I'm quoting, "Don't allow your relatives or your sons to be converted into a killer like myself. If I could ask forgiveness from those I hurt, I would do so, including those many people I robbed. But there are wounds I cannot repair. I can't very well go to the house of the señora and say, señora, look, I assassinated your son, and I've come here so you can forgive me. This woman, if she had a gun, she'd probably shoot me, or if she had a machete, she'd kill me. So all I can ask is God's forgiveness, because I can't go directly to her or anyone else and ask for it. If I could change my personality, I'd leave all this. But at 31 years old, I'm too old for this kind of work. And you don't see anyone over 40 in the G2. That's why when you enter G2, they tell you to forget about your family, to forget about retiring from the job, to lead a tranquil life. They tell you because when you're no longer serviceable to this organization, your own colleagues will be the ones who are going to kill you. And I ask, because you know too much? Of course, you know too much.
Did you find other people who echoed his thoughts and had remorse for what they'd done?
I would say a number of officers I interviewed, but I would say on the whole, no. Most of them felt that what they had done in what they refer to as the pacification campaign, which was the massacre campaigns in the early 80s, was something that they honestly believed that they were doing the right thing. That they honestly believe that in order to save the institution of the Army, in order to save the state, which in their minds is one and the same thing, they had to proceed in a very, very systematic manner to, if necessary, kill, as they proceeded to do, 2% of the population. So overall, my sense is that these officers have a mindset which, frankly, I was quite shocked about in coming to terms with this, is there is no moral dilemma here in killing. The difference, I think, is that we see that there are those who feel that in order to do so, you must do in a very systematic manner, and not to end up in what they refer to as blindness. You have to know why you're doing it, and you have to be systematic about doing it. And so in their minds, I would say the majority of officers I spoke with, there was a sense that this was justifiable, and they needed to restore order. And if it meant the massive violence, then so be it.
What else did the man who was a torturer working for Army Intelligence tell you about the methods of torture that they used?
I'm going to read another section from the torture. I ask him, what kinds of torture methods does G2 use? We use the most painful we can find in order to pull out as much information from the person. Sewing needles, electric cables. One places an electric battery in water and electrifies the water. There are many forms of this, pulling out fingernails. Who decides which methods to use? I asked him. Depends on the person being tortured. There are those who only need to be pricked with a needle and say, don't kill me, I'm going to help you. So you stop with that person, torturing that person, and only two or three more kicks, and that person remains there. And then there are those who say, no, you so-and-so, I am a gorilla, I am not going to squeal. The mission of a gorilla is to leave and return alive or dead, but never to say anything. And when they say no, when they give you no information, it's someone who you then cut off at least a finger. And he says, kill me, I will say nothing. Then you cut off an ear, and he still refuses to speak. And you cut off another finger, and he still refuses. And you realize that you could cut this person into 1,000 pieces, and he won't give you anything. So why bother torturing him? So in one stroke, you eliminate him.
My guest is Jennifer Shermer. She teaches at Harvard and is the author of The Guatemalan Military Project. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Harvard teacher Jennifer Shermer, who has interviewed members of the Guatemalan military about raping and torturing victims. The Truth Commission report talks about acts of genocide, systematic torture, state-sponsored disappearances. Did you meet any of the people and interview any of the people who participated in the genocides?
Yes, I did. I interviewed a number of officers. In fact, I interviewed several colonels and generals who were involved in planning and implementing the campaign massacre strategy. And one general actually on the table where we were having the interview drew out the massacre campaign. And in the interview I have with him, he says, the army attacked. And here were the villages on this side. Here's the population supporting the guerrillas from behind. And the army attacked everyone. And we continued attacking and attacking and attacking until we cornered them. And we got to the point where the population was separated from the leaders exactly in 1982. And we did, in many ways, he says, a 180-degree turn in strategy. And what he's referring to here is this shift in strategy from 100% extermination in 80 and 81 to what's he refers to as a 30-70% one, in which 30% of the effort goes towards killing zones. And he refers to these as killing zones, mata zonas, in which every living thing is trapped within the zone is killed. And 70% of the effort in this massacre campaign is put into feeding refugees, established civil patrols. In other words, creating forms in which the population itself can become participants in the killing, to create complicity within the indigenous population itself. And this strategy is referred to as beans and bullets, in which elimination is directly connected with recuperation of refugees from these massacres to, in many ways, ensure a permanent presence of the military in these areas.
So if I understand this correctly, this means that the Mayan peasants who before had been the victims of genocide were now offered a deal. If you don't want to be killed, then work for the military and we'll feed you.
Yes, essentially that. And what when you talk about these issues with these officers, they refer to the issue of that no distinction was made between civilian populations and the guerrilla when, in fact, they were attacking and massacring these villages. And then what they would do is that they would often capture people and force them to become either informers or soldiers or civil patrollers to work with the army. In other words, they made the civilian population, indigenous population, they made them make a choice. Either you die or you collaborate.
What surprised you most about the Truth Commission's findings?
I think the most surprising finding is that the Truth Commission began from a very weak mandate, really one of the weakest of all Truth Commissions in the hemisphere. It was not allowed to name names. Its documentation was not to be utilized for trials. And yet this commission report has emerged as a benchmark within and outside of Guatemala. It is the first commission in the hemisphere to conclude that genocide has occurred during the period under its investigation. This has never happened before in Latin America. And by finding for genocide, it has opened up the possibility for trials.
You spent about 10 years interviewing military men in Guatemala trying to understand the mindset behind state-sponsored violence. Why has that been so important for you to understand? Why do you think it's important for us to understand that?
My sense is that unless we understand why violence occurs and how it becomes justified, how people come to explain what they have done to themselves and to others in their group and to the world, that we will not be any closer. I mean, we can document abuses and we can document massive campaigns, which are extraordinarily important to do, but we also need to understand why it happens, how it becomes justified, what are the ideologies which allow us to believe that what we are doing is correct and not only correct, but supremely necessary in order to maintain a vision of order and stability. Unless we understand that, we are not any closer, I believe, in trying to keep such violence from reoccurring in the world.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
It's been my pleasure.
Jennifer Shermer teaches at Harvard and is the author of The Guatemalan Military Project. President Clinton is scheduled to visit Guatemala next week as part of a Central American trip. The White House says he will most likely discuss the findings of the Truth Commission's report with Guatemala's leaders.